Welcome to Tauri Macha, Nachiomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rena Foreman, and today we will be studying Yechezkel, Perek Mem, Chapter 40. We have followed Yechezkel for the past 39 Prakim, from prophecies of destruction and exile, to prophecies to other nations, and finally, to prophecies of comfort to the nation of Israel. In the recent redemptive Prakim, we had prophecies of dry bones coming to life, and a climactic war with Gog. That war, according to the Psukim, takes place in Acharit Hayamim. It is a war at the end of days. Seemingly, it is a war to end all wars. There were many times in our history when people expressed the hope that the trials and tribulations of their era would in fact be this final war, the war of Acharit Hayamim that is prophesied about in the Nevi'im. When I think of that hope, my mind shifts to my own childhood, to a song that was popular when I was growing up in Israel as a child in the 70s during the Yom Kippur War. My father had gone off to fight in the war. It was just me, my mother, and sisters at home. And we heard this song on the radio, this poignant song in which a father promises his daughter that this war will be the very last war. It is a song that meant so much to me, but not just to me. That song took the nation through the harsh realities of war. Ani mavtiach lach, yalda sheli ktana, shezu tia hamechama ha'achrona. I promise you, my daughter, that this war will be the last war. Excuse the tears. The Prakim we are about to study will detail a vision of Yechezkel involving the building of a third Beit HaMikdash. The Bayit is designed as an everlasting edifice. Yechezkel's vision is incredibly elaborate, as if they are actual detailed blueprints. The message is that although the vision paints a hope that may be far off in the future, it is very real. There is a hands-on, nuts-and-bolts quality to this third Mikdash. It is not a mere dream. The connection between the final war of the last Prakim and Yechezkel and the permanent and final Mikdash in the upcoming Prakim is highlighted as well in Sefer Yechezkel, where we have a complementary vision of the War of Gog. Whereas in Yechezkel, the war and the building of the Mikdash are juxtaposed, the conceptual connection between the two isn't really spelled out. Zechariah helps us out here and spells out the connection for us a little better. Here are some of the last Prakim of Sefer Zechariah. It speaks of the time that will come after the earth-shaking destruction of Gog's armies. V'haya kol ha-notar mikol ha-goyim ha-baim al Yerushalayim v'alu midei shana b'shana li'ishtachavo l'melech Hashem Tzvakot v'lachog el Chag HaSukkot. And it will be that all the survivors from among the nations that had formerly attacked Israel, those nations remaining after the War of Gog, they are to come to the Mikdash to worship God, to bow and celebrate Sukkot, along with Jews of the land of Israel. The vision of the new Mikdash that is painted for us in Zechariah is not a vision just for the Bnei Yisrael. The vision specifically includes the other nations. They are invited and expected to participate in the worship of God at this new temple. The Nevuah in Zechariah ends with a mention of pots in the city of Yerushalayim. V'haya kol sir b'Yerushalayim uv'Yehuda kodesh l'Hashem Tzvakot uva'u kol hazovchim v'lakchu mehem uvishlu vahem. At the end of days, there will be so many Gentiles coming into the city to celebrate with the Jews, there will be literally a shortage of pots. Every pot in Yerushalayim will be holy, and it will carry with it zevachim, holy korbanot that will be brought to Hashem. So let's reflect on that image for a minute. For us, the readers of Yechezkel, the notion of pots on the one hand and Yerushalayim on the other, well, we have chilling memories here. Let's think back to the pots that symbolize Yerushalayim in our Sefer. In both Perek Yud Aleph and Chaf Daled, the pots that were metaphorically associated with Yerushalayim were the forebearers of destruction. The people had hoped that Yerushalayim would protect them, as a pot protects its contents. But the prophet said that was not to be. Instead, using the metaphor of a pot, the Navi forecasts that the bones and meat in the pot would be burned in fires, in a terrible crucible. And ultimately, they would dry out in the process of exile and destruction. Much later, in Paraglamid Zion, we encountered a Nevuah that forecasts a reversal of that awful prophecy, the reconstitution of these bones in a Bik'ah, a pot-like valley. If a pot is a man-made vessel, a valley is a God-made vessel, and in it are bones once more, bones that will come back to life, and life is breathed back into the nation once again. Now getting back to Zechariah, isn't it fascinating that the last pasuk of the Sefer should take us back to the image of pots and Yerushalayim in the end of time? The Mikdash is finally rebuilt, and now the pots have a joyous story to tell. They will all ultimately become vessels of holiness as Israelites unite with Gentiles to bow together before their common Father in heaven. King Shlomo's dream that the Mikdash would one day serve as a focal point for a global worship of God will have become a reality. It is a world in which every pot in Yerushalayim is holy. And now, let's pick up the trail with the first psukim of our parak, Parak Mem. Be'esrim b'chamei shana legalutenu, b'rosh hashana be'asor lachodesh, be'arba esra shana, achar shehukta ha'ir, be'etzim hayom hazeh, hayta alai yad Hashem, ve'yaveoti shama. In the 25th year of our exile, on Rosh Hashanah, on the 10th of the month, 14 years after the city was struck, on that very day, Hashem's hand was on me and brought me there. So, Yechezkel is being brought by God in a heavenly vision to survey Yerushalayim. The hand of God is bringing him to take a virtual tour of a city. Does that sound familiar? Back in Parak Chet, Yechezkel also felt God's hand upon him. V'tipol alai sham yad Hashem Elokim. And he was also transported in a vision from Bavel to Yerushalayim. V'yishlach tavnit yad, v'yikacheni b'tzitzit roshi, v'tisau ti ruach b'in ha'aretz u'b'in ha'shamayim, v'taveo ti Yerushalma b'ar mar'ot Elohim. There, God suspended him in mid-air, so to speak, giving him an insider's view of the terrible happenings in Yerushalayim. Could the two tours of Yerushalayim be related? Well, what happened during the first tour? Back then, one of the first things Yechezkel saw was a breach in a wall, which revealed the many toevot, the forms of Avodah Zarah that were commonplace in the Mikdash. Showing him those sins being performed right in the confines in the Mikdash, that was almost God's way of breaking the news to Yechezkel. Highlighting the sins, well, it made the punishment that was to come, the destruction, make sense. Because obviously, the Mikdash can't survive with this level of sin rife in the city. And on this virtual tour, Yechezkel not only saw the sins of the people, he also saw the early signs of God's kavod, the divine presence, leaving the Mikdash. He saw the retreat of the Shekhinah from the city of Yerushalayim into what eventually became a heavenly Merkava, a chariot. And that vision included a heavenly Kohen Gadol-like figure called an Ish Levush Habadim, who seemed to preside over the destruction of the Mikdash and the city of Yerushalayim. Okay, so much for our review of Yechezkel's vision of the departure of the Shekhinah. Keeping all that in mind, let's come back to the Psukim in our Parak, and let's resume reading. So here is Yechezkel. He is being brought once again to Yerushalayim. B'mar'ot Elokim heviani el Eretz Yisrael, v'nicheni el har gavoa ma'od, v'alav kemivne ir minegev. God brought Yechezkel to Israel in his vision and placed him on a tall mountain on which there was a city-like structure. We are used to Yechezkel's visions taking place in valleys, by the way. That's where he first saw the chariot of Hashem back in Parag Aleph. That's where he saw the dry bones. But this time, he finds himself perched on a high mountain. Next in his vision, we are introduced to what seems like a heavenly figure. V'hine ish mar'ehu kemar'eh nechoshet. There is a man whose appearance is like copper, a tin man of sorts. Ufetil pishtim biyado ukne hamida. And there is a flax string in his hand and a measuring rod. Who is this man? And did you catch what he was holding in his hand? He has what seems like a measuring tape with him. Of all things, his measuring device seems to be none other than a string made of flax, kind of like a piece of yarn. Strange detail. Kahu made Bashar, and this figure stands at the gate, waiting to greet Yechezkel. This figure, he is beginning to remind us of someone we have met before in Sefer Yechezkel. He reminds us of someone scary, someone else, another Ish, who was really a kind of angel, someone else who was summoned by Hashem for a purpose. After all, that figure from the past was also holding something in his hand, just as our figure is. Yes, I'm referring to the fearsome Ish Levush Habadim from Yechezkel's earlier vision of Yerushalayim. Who is our mystery man in Perek Mem? Is he the Levush Habadim once more? As similar as these figures seem, though, there is a fundamental difference between them, and that difference is reflected in the instruments each of these figures are holding. You see, the earlier figure's instrument was an instrument of destruction. He had klei mashchito biyado, but the figure in our parak, he has something else biyado in his hand. He's holding an instrument, a tape measure of sorts. He is holding klei midah. Why would he need such a thing? What exactly is he measuring? Let's look at the psukim. V'hinei choma michutz labayit saviv saviv. And behold, the wall outside the house going all the way around. And in the hand of the man was the measuring rod. Six large amot long. He measured the width of the structure and its height. And he came to the gate facing east and climbed its step. Vayamad et saf hashar. He measured the entrance. K'ne'echad rochav, v'etzafechad k'ne'echad rochav. Each side, one rod wide. V'yamad et ulam hasha'ar. He measured the antechamber of the gate. V'yamad et roach petach hasha'ar. He measured the width of the entrance. He is taking all these measurements. He is doing all this because he is laying the groundwork for a great construction project for the building of the third Mikdash. Starting to get the picture? These two angelic men, they are opposites of one another. The role of one is the precise mirror image of the other. The first figure, the one Yechezkel encountered on his earlier tour, he was oblivious to Yechezkel, and he was single-mindedly presiding over destruction. But now in our parak, the man Yechezkel encounters is talking to him, guiding him, helping him understand what he is seeing. And he is a construction man, a builder, or a rebuilder, to be more accurate. Speaking of this rebuilder, this construction man, as we said before, now it's time to consider that measuring tape he had in his hand. We heard a little detail about it. It was a petil pishtan, a string of flax. Pishtan. That reminds us of something, doesn't it? The Kohen Gadol-like figure from the earlier prakim. He is identified by his clothes. He is Levush Badim. He is wearing clothes of linen. But how do you make linen? You make it out of threads of flax, threads of pishtan. So the Ish in Perek Mem, we don't hear about his clothing at all. He isn't clothed in Badim. All he has is a single piece of pishtan, the raw material for Badim. A single pishtan string that he uses as a tape measure, if you will, for the purpose of construction. Instead of being clothed in clothing associated with the destruction, it's kind of like he has unraveled those flax clothes worn by the Ish Levush Habadim. And now all he is left with is a piece of yarn those clothes were sewn with. It's almost as though he has undone or unraveled the destruction that the Levush Habadim presided over. Not only has he undone the destruction, but this current Ish, this current figure, he is turning the destruction around. Using the very string that was the raw material, so to speak, of destruction, he will use that in the service of rebuilding. One more linguistic parallel between the two visions really solidifies the link between them. The Levush Habadim, all those prakim ago, before his act of destruction, before he threw the coals on the city, he was to mark the foreheads of those that would be saved from destruction. He was to put a mark shaped like a tav on their foreheads. V'hitvita tav, the pasuk back then says. Now, listen to the words in our parak. Listen closely to the language here in Perek Mem as to what our Mr. Construction Man starts building. He builds these little compartments in the new Mikdash. And guess what they are called? The Tav, Shlosha Mipo u'Shlosha Mipo, and three Tavim on each side. And later, V'Tav ve'Lav ve'Limav, and it's Tavim and supports. It's the same word Tav, and this time, it has nothing to do with destruction. It has to do with construction. The Tav is an element in the blueprint of the Mikdash, which is being measured by our figure, our measuring guy. Before closing out our look at this parak, I want to take you back to its opening words one more time. When Yechezkel was taken on his redemptive virtual tour of Yerushalayim, the parak opened by saying, Be'etzem hayom hazeh hayta alayad Hashem v'yaveoti shama. In the middle of that day, God's hand was upon me and brought me. As it happens, that phrase, Be'etzem hayom hazeh, it appears one other time and one other time only in Sefer Yechezkel. Its other occurrence is back in Perek Chaf Dalet. There, we had a vision of Nebuchadnezzar laying siege to the city, a vision of what became the 10th of Tevet. V'hi dvar Hashem elai b'shana ha-tshi'it b'chodesh ha-siri b'asor l'chodesh l'mor. Hashem spoke to me in the 9th year, in the 10th month, on the 10th of the month, saying, Ben Adam, k'tov l'cha et shem hayom, et etzem hayom hazeh, samach melech bavel, El Yerushalayim be'etzem hayom hazeh. Ben Adam, write down today's date, this very day, because on this very day, the king of Bavel laid siege against Yerushalayim. So those prakim back in Perek Chaf Dalet, this vision of Nebuchadnezzar besieging the city, it happened on the 10th of the month. Well, guess what? In our vision, in Perek Mem, the other be'etzem hayom hazeh, the vision Yechezkel has, also takes place on the 10th of the month. Ba'asor l'chodesh ba'arba'asra shana achar asher hukta ha'ir be'etzem hayom hazeh. It seems that somehow what's happening here in Perek Mem is a counterpoint to what happened many chapters ago. In Perek Chaf Dalet, Yechezkel saw a vision of the 10th of Tevet, of the king of Bavel surrounding the city walls as to besiege it. You know, when you besiege a city, you need to know every inch of the wall you are surrounding. The vision of that siege is the vision Yechezkel had back in Perek Chaf Dalet. But now, in Perek Mem, we are getting a counterpoint to this. Our figure, too, surrounds the walls of the city. But he carefully measures its perimeter for the purpose of rebuilding it. V'hine choma michutz labayit saviv saviv. So, like in Perek Chaf Dalet, once again, we have a wall, a choma, and once again, it is surrounded, saviv saviv. But this time, it is surrounded not by an enemy, but a friend. This time, a figure surrounds a wall not to destroy what's inside of it, but rather to build back what's inside it. He's doing something marvelous and seemingly unattainable. Humpty Dumpty is actually being put back together again. Yechezkel is witnessing the rebuilding of Yerushalayim. In Perek Mem, Yechezkel's prophecies begin to come full circle. The forces that once conspired to destroy a city now transform themselves into forces that will rebuild it. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilu Nishmat, Riva Schwab, Rivka Bat, Alexander Sender.